Welcome to the February 2014 issue of Dialogues in Dermatology. The American Academy of Dermatology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The American Academy of Dermatology designates this enduring material for a maximum of 2 AMA PRA Category 1 credits. Physicians should claim only the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. This activity is recognized by the American Academy of Dermatology for 2 AAD recognized credits and may be used toward the AAD CME award. Participation in this activity is completed by listening to dialogues on CD or a downloaded MP3 file, achievement of a 70% or higher score on the post-test, and completion of an activity evaluation. The date of original release for this issue is February 2014. The expiration date is January 2017. At the conclusion of this learning activity, participants should be able to identify communication strategies to refer psychocutaneous patients to a mental health care professional. Identify cosmetic treatments to use in conjunction with medical management for conditions such as erythema, pigmentation disorders, and wrinkles. Identify factors to consider when comparing and contrasting various topical, systemic, and phototherapy treatment options for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Contributors to this issue of Dialogues in Dermatology have disclosed the following financial relationships. Dr. Mary C. Martini has served on the advisory board for and received honoraria from Dove Unilever and has been an investigator for and received grants from Melasciences. Dr. Mary Lupo has served on the advisory board for and received honoraria from Allergan Inc., L'Oreal USA Inc., MERS Aesthetics, Thirplex, and Valiant Pharmaceuticals International. She has been an investigator for and received honoraria from Allergan Inc., Dr. Holmquist Healthcare, and Neocutis. She has been a speaker for and received honoraria from BTL Industries, Lumenis, Medicis Pharmaceutical Corporation, and Syneron Inc. She has been the founder of and received other financial benefit from Cosmetic Bootcamp and has been a consultant for and received a salary from Philosophy. Dr. John Zick has been an investigator for and received other financial benefits from Eisai Pharmaceuticals and has received a royalty from UpToDate Inc. Dr. John Y.M. Koo has been a speaker for and received honoraria from Elio Pharma U.S. Dr. Diane S. Burson has served on the advisory board for and received honoraria from Galderma Laboratories L.P., La Roche-Posay Laboratoire Pharmaceutique, Elio Pharma U.S., and Medicis Pharmaceutical Corporation. And she has been a consultant for and received honoraria from Procter & Gamble Company. All other contributors, including editors, interviewees, reviewers, and staff, reported they have no relevant relationships with commercial interests. A comprehensive list of disclosed financial relationships is available in the syllabus.
Welcome back to Dialogues in Dermatology. This is Terry Cronin, your editor-in-chief. This is Dialogues in Dermatology for February 2014, Volume 70, Issue 2. This month, we have three special dialogues detailing psychodermatology, cosmetics, and cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Much can be said about the skin offering clues to the psychiatric state of our patients. Many times, the dermatologist is uniquely positioned to help recognize patients with psychiatric problems and to facilitate assistance for those in need of greater psychological care. In our first dialogue this month, we join Dr. John Koo and Dr. Mary C. Martini for an elucidating discussion on psychodermatology and optimizing the patient-physician interaction.
Hello, this is Dr. Mary C. Martini. Today, we are speaking with Dr. John Koo, who is professor and vice chair at UCSF and is head of the psoriasis and phototherapy unit at UCSF. Dr. Koo, you have been involved in psychoderm for quite a while and actually have a clinic at UCSF. And let me first ask you, how are patients referred to that clinic to see you?
Well, that's a delicate kind of matter because not every patient with psychological issue want to be told that they have psychological issue, especially if they are delusional and have no insight. On the other hand, we make them feel good about being referred as opposed to feel defensive about being referred. So we actually refer to those patients within our clinic with a code name of VIP. You know, so that when they called for appointment, they are instructed to say, I am the VIP patient. And they know that they are typically seen at the end of the clinic because we want to spend more time with them. So they actually feel good about being those special subgroup of patients as opposed to feeling defensive.
So what can the dermatologist do that does not have the benefits of someone like you in their area? How do they refer them to a psychiatrist?
referring this type of patients to psychiatrists, it could be a challenge depending on if they have insight or they have no insight. There's two types of psychodermatology patients. One, for example, people with psoriasis or eczema who know that stress make their skin disease to flare. Those type of people, if they were recommended to see mental health professional, oftentimes they appreciate it and they could very well be receptive. On the other hand, it's almost ironic that people who are more psychologically compromised, such as delusional patients, tend to become much more without insight and defensive about being sent to a psychiatrist or any mental health professional. So for those people, first of all, it's important to tell them that this is an extra help that we are suggesting, and we are not in any way abandoning you. It's so much more acceptable to take psychological referral if they know that the dermatologist is going to be with them. The other is that if somebody is delusional, just as an extreme example, they have no insight. So don't tell them that we're referring you because you are delusional. Instead, come up with some acceptable type of explanation, such as people with delusions or parastosis who are really tormented, who are really suffering. If I were in their position, I would say something like, well, you're really suffering and you have a mysterious condition that we don't exactly know what's causing it. When you have a chronic condition cause much suffering, even though you're doing your best to cope with it, it's actually helpful to see a professional who can help you cope with it even better. You know, so you don't have to be stuck on talking about etiology or pathogenesis. You can even be talking about coping, which might turn out to be a lot more acceptable way of introducing psychological referral than arguing about whether they are psychogenic or not.
I know there has been a discussion about whether a dermatologist should write a drug, say, like Pimazyme.
Well, the reality of the situation is that if the dermatologists do not provide these type of medications, the most likely outcome is that these patients will never be adequately treated. So whether we as a specialty of dermatology feel comfortable writing or not, I think we should know that we are like the last resort. Because these people on their own, as I'm talking about delusional patients in particular, will not go see a psychiatrist or any other mental health professional. The second thing is that dermatology, in my opinion, is uniquely uneasy about psychotropic medications. The reality of medical practice is that majority of psychotropic medications are written by non-psychiatrists, usually family practice, primary care, internal medicine, pediatrics. In fact, if you look at those specialties journal, it's filled with advertisement about anti-anxiety agent, antidepressant. When I was primarily practicing as a psychiatrist, it's pretty much routine that people who are referred to me has already been on multiple anti-anxiety agent, antidepressant, even medication for insomnia before they're referred to a psychiatrist. So the use of psychotropic medication by non-psychiatrists is a rule rather than exception, except in dermatology. I think dermatology is a specialty that the psychotropic industry forgot. So if you look at decades of Journal of American Academy of Dermatology, Archives of Dermatology, or any dermatology journal, you won't find any advertisement about any psychotropic medication, which is in great contrast to the rest of medicine. But the use of these medications are not as so complicated. I think it's a lot more complicated to learn how to use cyclosporine or biologics. If you remember, every psychiatrist don't even remember how to do physical examination. They typically have other doctors do physical examination for them, and they can handle psychotropic medications. A specialty like dermatology, where we use biologic, we use methotrexate, we use Dapsone, there's no reason that we should be afraid of these medications that psychiatrists can handle without being able to do physical exam. And it's certainly not an anomaly in medicine, medical practice for, once again, non-psychiatrists to prescribe psychotropic medications.
So for dermatologists to be more comfortable in this arena, one, we can incorporate it in our residency programs.
Yes.
But also there should possibly be some courses at the academy so physicians are a little more comfortable with some of the side effects and the negative aspects.
Yes, that would be most ideal. And even though there's a daunting list of anti-anxiety agent, antidepressant, antipsychotic, anti-obsessive compulsive, in reality, even practicing psychiatrists only use a few. So if a dermatologist feels comfortable with one medication for each category, that's plenty. In fact, there are medications such as paroxetine has multiple FDA indications. So one medication can actually be used for anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder. And so just knowing two medications, for example, and this is sheerly, you know, simply an example, one pimozide, which is used for delusion, one paroxetine for anxiety, depression, and obsessive compulsive disorder. If average dermatologists learn these two medications, they can probably cover about 80% of what we have to deal with.
That's great. That's great advice. Let me ask you about one other difficult patient that we see in derm, and that's the obsessive compulsive patient.
Right.
Those of us now with iPhones and iPad and internet have emails from these individuals all day long. And it becomes a challenge in interacting with these types of patients. What are your guidelines or what helpful hints do you have?
I'm talking about a situation where obsessive compulsive patient undergoing patch testing, for example, every few days demands a new list of things to be avoided. This happens, I guess, forever. Now, when a situation like that is clearly over the top occurs, from psychiatric interpersonal point of view, there are two ways to handle the situation. And these two ways, one is called content and the other is process. Now, content means you just have to deal with it at the level that these patients ask you. So if they ask you five items and say, do they need to avoid this or not? And you say no. 3 days later, there's another eight. And then 3 days later, there's another 15. If you're only dealing with on a content level, then you're just stuck having to respond on a content level, which means there's no way to stop this process because content is going to be keep coming. The process means to actually and skillfully and diplomatically bring up what's happening as in this process as opposed to just talking about the content. Now, it takes skill because you don't want to offend the patient or make the patient feel defensive, but you can actually bring up the point nicely that you've been sending me this list like every few days. And I already told you that the list I provided is good for at least 6 months, but you keep on sending me this list every 3 days. That makes me worry about you. I think you're probably kind of anxious. Maybe you're very worried. But I know you're very intelligent, very capable, and you have better things to do with your life than keep worrying about things ad infinitum or whatever. So let's talk about why you have to worry about these things every few days. Now, that is an example of dealing with on a process level. Now, when you deal with it on a process level, the first response you get from the patient will tell you how much insight the patient has. If the patient say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't mean to bother you, I know this is over the top, then you're in good shape. Because in fact, the patient had some insight. And in fact, the healthier part of the patient's mind can become your ally. And you can encourage that part of it to suppress the unhealthy part, which keeps generating endless lists.
Does it help to say to the patient, I will answer your emails once a week? I will only do this once a week and define a period of time you will interact with them.
Yes, but that's plan B. You know, how you respond depends on how they respond to the fact that you actually going to deal with it on process level and not just simply on endless content level. You know, so to put a restriction is better than not putting restriction. But that's not quite as good as if the patient themselves begin to realize that this is excessive and they themselves kind of stop doing it, but because they're encouraged to be more insightful. You know, so when we want to go deeper to understand who the heck are we dealing with, you know, go deeper than the skin, so to speak, then we have to be ready to appreciate whatever we find. You know, if the patient is in fact capable of some insight and intelligent, then we like to deal with it on that level. If the patient don't get it at all, what you're talking about, and become defensive, then just to make your life livable, you might then have to go to plan B, which is sort of a lower function, which is to say, okay, you're acting like a 4-year-old or 3-year-old. We need a limit setting, otherwise you're going to drive me bananas. So I'm only going to respond once a week. Now, If you find that the patient is even worse psychologically than you expected and not even capable of that, and become truly defensive and convinced that, something is really poisoning them, then you begin to get the inkling that this isn't just obsessive compulsive. Maybe this patient is bordering on delusion. When you just deal with this kind of patient on content level, then you're endlessly stuck answering emails. So I would recommend venturing into dealing with the process level and find out how do they respond. You know, are they high functioning with insight? Are they mid functioning where they just need a limit setting because they can't quite available for insight? Or are they actually even lower functioning? It's delusional. In which case your strategy might be very different.
I know you are also well known for discussing elements of making the patient interaction satisfactory to the patient and optimizing that interaction. Can you discuss some of those techniques? For instance, what is expectation management?
Expectation management is simply telling the patient upfront what they expect from the medication they are prescribed or treatment that they are recommended. And I find that in a busy dermatology practice, it's very easy to forget that because we are conditioned to make diagnosis, think about differential diagnosis, you know, come out with the right treatment, write a prescription or email prescription, and we often think that's the end of it. In fact, that's not the end of it for many patients. If I were to prescribe medications, that's not going to work quickly. For example, psoriasis. If I were to use non-steroid, vitamin D analog, oral retinoid, it's going to take a long time before it kicks in. If I don't tell them that, the chances are great that the patient would come to conclusion that the medicine's not right for them and they'll just give up. So I find expectation management, telling them exactly what to expect, you know, just as important as writing the right prescription and can determine success or failure of the whole intervention.
Tell me, what is cheerleading in response?
Oh, yeah. Cheerleading is recognizing that many dermatological bread and butter kind of conditions are chronic. Of course, I run psoriasis center phototherapy unit, so we see people with eczema, with psoriasis, or lichen planus, pityriasis rubra pilaris, people with really long-term disorder. And they not only need quick fix, but they need maintenance therapy. But trying to do maintenance therapy is not easy. It's almost like encouraging somebody to do exercise on a long-term basis. They can do it for a while, but after a while, they need support. Otherwise, they will drop out. So I actually find myself being a lot more able to help these people effectively if I'm like a personal trainer, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, enthusiastic, full of energy, and telling them, you can do it, you can do it. I think that's almost as important for many patients as writing the right prescriptions. And that's what I call cheerleading.
Do you do most of this yourself, or do you have a nurse or a PA help you facilitate these kind of discussions?
I do most of these myself because it's not necessarily that time-consuming as people might assume. I hate to be taking this comment in the wrong way, but part of medicine is acting. So how you come across, you know, whether your eyes shined, whether you exude energy, enthusiasm, that doesn't have to take energy necessarily. Now, as I mentioned, there are some people who need frequent support, but even if I see them frequently, I see them for a short time. That short interaction means a lot to them. It's more critical that you can connect with the patient as opposed to how much time you spend. In fact, some psychodermatology patients, including delusional patients, if you spend a lot of time, they become defensive because they expect to be treated as a dermatology patient. And if you spend tons of time, sometimes they appreciate it, but sometimes they can actually become suspicious. Like, do you think, you know, I'm a mental case? You know, so it's not, you know, it's very common to think that it's a time that's important. But in fact, I think how you come across in a short time can be just as effective as a lot of time spent.
And we've discussed a lot of positive things we can do as physicians. What are some things both on the patient end and the physician end that can lead to dissatisfaction in a visit?
Just because I deal with common chronic inflammatory conditions, which is severe chronic psoriasis, generalized, for example, or eczema. One of the most common things that I observe that make patients not happy is undertreatment. And undertreatment is where the patient has generalized skin disease, such as psoriasis, and the dermatologist is not willing or to consider going beyond topical. And that is a very common problem.
How do you deal with the angry patient? Medicine is changing. Even the Medicare patients, their Medicare will change in the coming years. And many patients come in angry with their higher deductibles, with their limitations of their current plan. And they come in and enter the room angry. What advice do you give to the physician in that situation?
People who are angry because they were denied payment, denied coverage, denied whatever, which really is beyond your control as physician, but they're angry anyway. I think it's very important to do everything you can to remind the patient that you're not a bad guy and to show empathy, sympathy, that I am on your side. How horrible is this? With that kind of patient, if I'm looking like I'm confronting the patient, meaning face-to-face, and say, this cannot be done, this is denied, and I'm not going to manipulate my record for you to get this, then it becomes confrontation between you and the patient, which really goes into downward spiral. So what I typically do with that kind of patient is sometimes I physically sit not facing the patient, but actually sitting with the patient facing the same direction. And I show plenty of empathic comment. What that means is, oh, this is so horrible. These plans are really being stingy. I feel so sorry for you. Almost, you know, make deliberate effort to show that I'm sympathetic, you know, but at the same time, I'm kind of limited in my power to help. You know, I'd be happy to write letters. I'd be happy to be your advocate, but this is so horrible. And essentially, at all times, remind the patient that you and I are on the same side. The bad guy is on the other side. It's us against them, to create that type of environment and indicate that with everything that I say. And then the patient will calm down and greatly appreciate your sympathy, but also recognize not only your limitation, but most importantly, that the bad guy is not you, but it's the government, it's the insurance, it's the Medicare, whatever out there. And that way, it's much more satisfactory to the patient as well as how they experience you.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today and participating in this discussion. I think it's been very beneficial and helpful to our listeners. And I thank you again, Dr. Koo.
Great. Well, thank you for asking me to be here. Really appreciate it.
Psychodermatology, or psychocutaneous medicine, deals with conditions that bridge psychiatry and dermatology. Once the diagnosis has been made, adequate management requires that physicians address both dermatologic and psychological needs. There are two types of psychodermatology patients, those with primary psychiatric conditions and those with secondary psychiatric conditions. Patients with primary psychiatric conditions can be very challenging to manage. For example, those with delusions of parasitosis may have no insight into their condition. Treatment of these patients necessitates a strategy that focuses on empathy and the formation of a therapeutic alliance. Showing empathy and working with them to find the cause for the problem can build rapport and make it easier for patients to accept and comply with a therapeutic regimen. Dermatologists should be comfortable prescribing basic psychotropic medications if necessary. Secondary psychiatric conditions come from chronic skin disorders that have had a negative impact on patients' psychosocial, physical, and occupational quality of life. Aggressive treatment of the skin disorder can improve the psychiatric component. Expectation management is important and helps mentally prepare patients for possible future skin disease flares and helps them cope with the chronic management regimen. The patient-doctor relationship becomes vitally important in managing psychodermatology patients. There are three strategies to help increase the satisfaction between the patient and the physician: empathy, expectation management, and cheerleading. Empathy comes from viewing the situation from the patient's perspective, which can allow the physician to better understand and counsel the patient. As Dr. Koo mentions, understanding the patient and keeping him or her well-informed and integral to the decision-making can allow better adherence. For example, phototherapy may be a top choice because it is effective and fairly safe, but the patient may not have the transportation needed to receive such therapy. Moreover, both empathy and sympathy are crucial in dealing with angry patients who may feel that way because they were denied payment, denied coverage, or other reason. Empathizing and reminding the patient that you are on their side creates an environment that can protect the patient-doctor relationship. Expectation management emphasizes the importance of informing the patient regarding what to expect from a given treatment plan and how long it will take for the condition to improve. False hope can lead to patient frustration and even distrust of the physician. For example, non-steroidal vitamin D analogs for psoriasis may take a significant amount of time before patients observe any clinical benefit, and if they are not informed of this, chances are great that they will believe that the medication is not effective for them and will stop taking it. Giving the patients a well-established set of expectations earlier on in the encounter can assist in improved treatment adherence and better patient-doctor relationships. Finally, cheerleading describes the technique of encouraging patients to adhere to a chronic management plan. Chronic recurring and relapsing dermatologic conditions can be a significant burden on patients, and often clinical outcome is dependent on a patient's compliance. Thus, maintenance therapy of chronic diseases such as psoriasis, atopic dermatitis, or pityriasis rubra-pilaris requires the dermatologist to sometimes play the role of personal trainer and encouraging patients to stick with the therapy. Encouraging statements such as, "You've been doing a great job, and I know you can keep this up," may help patients continue treatment through repeated visits. Treating psychodermatology patients requires the careful understanding of their subjective and objective realities and being able to see the situation from the patient's perspective. This process may be challenging, but often leads to successful outcomes for the dermatologist.